part of this opposition is very prone to violence. Do you think at one point they might go into extreme violence against the people if they want to? People want to. Are there any plans if they want to resort? We know that they put those wires that decapitated people. We know that kind mm-hmm. of people are part of this opposition. Are they prepared for that?
I know the Chavistas always support law and peace and the Constitution. But we know the U.S. government doesn't care about any of that. And I'm sure their thing is we're going to get in power and get rid of the Chavistas. And if we have to use violence to do it, no problem. And right next to Venezuela is Colombia, which is full of paramilitaries, which might be soon out of a job, right, with the peace talks. So I don't know. There's a lot of paramilitaries could go in the they have already gone into Venezuela. They've been there with the Garimbas. They were there. If the U.S. needs to use violence, you know, like in what's going on in Syria, yeah, they'll do it. If they don't need to use violence, then they won't. But there's certainly no hesitation about them doing it.
Even though Venezuelans, we are very peaceful people, the truth is that through Colombia, after like 50 years of war in that country, we have a big influx of violence. So it's true what Stan says about the possibility of, you know, right-wingers. I believe that they themselves are not going to be able to do it. But they can hire paramilitaries to selectively get rid of Chavista forces. That's a possibility. So, and you might be aware of that. And I believe that in a terrible scenario, the Chavista forces, besides trying to regain power, they're going to also to put a lot of effort in trying to have a good security to avoid situations like that. Yes.
So on this question, I think it's really important, and I appreciate the history you gave. I think we're all aware of what happened in Chile, right? There was a conscious decision by Allende and the government not to arm the masses, not to arm the neighborhood committees, not to arm the workers' committees, even though many were asking for that. I've never been to Venezuela. I know people from there. What's the situation right now? I mean, are people have arms? Because this is a real question that's going to come up maybe January 5th or soon thereafter.
Yes. Do you want to talk a little bit about that?
I'm not sure. But all I know is that there's military training for people, but I don't know if they have arms.
Yes, I mean, we have been developed, especially during Chavez time, a big, we call them militias. And the idea of having, with the Marxist concept of people in arms, have enough, you know, force to counteract whatever attack comes from abroad, especially. But I believe that it's not pepper what we have there in terms of that popular militia. I mean, I believe that most of the control of that militia is in hands of military. And sometimes that gives a problem in terms of how you can decentralize that in the case of, a constitutional disruption or something like that. So I believe that is problematic. But I also know that there are class of Venezuelan organizations that are also forever, since Chavez time, has been preparing themselves to drastic situations. Yep. And those guys live in the mountains. And they has been there training for years, even before Chavez. So they are there. I hope that they might help us in the worst scenario, of course.
Now, we have to remember in Chile, the military was always against Allende.
Right.
That's not the case in Venezuela.
Venezuela, right. It's true.
What's the situation now, military, in terms of the loyalty to Chavez and what's followed with Maduro and stuff like that?
What's the way I see it is that... Chavez still have a lot of influence over the military. and a lot of people, especially here in the north side of the world, they are especially mass media. They have been saying that because of that, Maduro is going to be able to promote a coup d'état against. I believe that never going to happen, if you ask me. But I believe that they might be trying right now to do the contrary. I mean, I'm talking about the right wingers. I mean, I believe that they now should be trying to touch some people in the military in Venezuela to see if they can, you know, get something. I believe that it's going to be hard for them to do so, if you ask me. But there's always, you know, and especially in situations like that with a change of party and things like that, I mean, people sometimes get like double think his commitments, you know what I mean? So that might create an environment for some people changing sides in the military. But I don't see it like a real possibility, if you ask me. And we have a good symbiosis between Maduro and Diosdado Cabello, that is the president of the National Assembly. And Diosdado Cabello is actually the most articulated political and military leader in Venezuela, and he is somehow the balance between Maduro and the military side of the government. I mean, and the military in Venezuela.
I find it very difficult to believe that the revolutionary leaders in Venezuela are ignorant, that they don't know how to raise the denomination of a bill. It seems to me what happened in the past period was the extractive industries had high prices, and a lot of social democratic countries were able to improve the conditions of the people. And a lot of these revolutionaries are new revolutionaries and are learning the process. And what clearly happened is international capitalism has entered into a serious crisis, and the countries that have relied on the extractive industries are no longer able to do what they were doing. And I'm sure the comrades in Venezuela, there are different groupings that are discussing that. You know, there may be some who are more interested in the corruption, but I'm sure there are some who are interested in the people of Venezuela. You know, and I have confidence that the Venezuelan people and the revolutionaries there will develop their understanding of the conditions and will move the revolution forward. I think some of the things that Stan raised are important, that there still is a lot of capitalism in Venezuela, and that restricts the real democracy there. And allowing the capitalists to have a say in the electoral process, you know, it distorts it. You know, what Stan was saying is true. And the situation requires an understanding of what are the new economic conditions, what are the new revolutionary tasks, and how do we move forward, and how do we mobilize our support. And I have confidence that the support of the revolution and the masses of the people there will defend the revolution.
Me too.
You know? And I think we have to be careful. And our responsibility here, the key thing for revolutionaries here, is to get rid of this government. This government is the enemy of the world, you know, and we have to organize our own people to transform the situation here. You know, and that's our key task.
Yes.
Yeah, I don't like to come and speak to a U.S. audience about criticisms of the government of Venezuela, because that's not really our business. Our business is to oppose what the U.S. is doing against Venezuela. But I don't think I could come here to talk about what it was like in the elections, and you're not going to ask me, well, why did they lose like this? So I addressed a lot of it. But we have to ask why Russia is basically a raw material exporter too, in oil. And Iran is also. But they're not undergoing this kind of thing that Venezuela is, and it's not just. But they don't seem like they're suffering like this.
They are.
Oh.
Russia is suffering very, very hard.
The people of Russia are suffering a lot.
Yeah. Wow. Okay.
I think that there's been a lot of suffering.
Yeah, the economy is not good.
Well, I know that. Well, yeah, the economy is not good. Yes, but I mean, they're not opposed to the government. They're not voting against Putin. And I should also say that I do help with the Alliance for Global Justice. We send out a Venezuela Weekly about progressive changes in Venezuela, which is just about like what they're doing there that we could be doing here if you wanted to subscribe to it, you could do that. Like this week, there's a National Assembly of the Communal Councils. And there is also a National Commission for LGB Rights was set up. And I forget the other one.
I believe that also Stan wanted to bring the criticism that was part of the debate after the election. I understand the way he present his soul because it's part of the discussion in Venezuela. And it's part of the madness of even Chavista forces that sometimes don't see that enough action from the government, from the executive branch to solve the questions. But that doesn't mean that we are putting all the blame on the government and that we don't understand that we are in the middle of a national and international war against Venezuela. So I believe that those are the key issues there. I mean, if you analyze the results of Venezuela, I mean, if you ask me, I will tell you economic war and international media campaign against Venezuela. Those two things were the ones that won the elections in Venezuela, if you ask me.
At one time, there were water shortages affecting the ability to deliver power to the major cities. Well, what's the situation with the environment and its impact on the infrastructure and the people?
I believe that right now the problem with water is not that bad as like 4 or 5 years ago. But they use it always before the elections, this strategy to create electricity chaos in the country. And there has been, I mean, they announced that 7 to 10 Venezuelans died trying to sabotage, just before the elections, trying to sabotage electrical plants and electrical distribution centers, and that creates some shortages of electricity in certain places, and that gets Venezuelans more mad against the government, because they blame the government of that. But the truth is that it's a strategy for the opposition in Venezuela to create more anger amongst the Venezuelans towards the government. That's the way I see it. I don't know if you want to say something.
Who controls the grid?
The what?
Who controls the electrical grid? Is it private and
public? It's mostly public, yes.
Mostly public.
Yes. But you have a big chain of, you know... And I mean, you can be sabotaged from abroad, from outside, but also you have a lot of people that work there that are not Chavistas.
Right.
So it's complex.
Given the landslide victory, will the opposition have enough votes to remove Maduro? Secondly, what impact will this landslide election have on the Venezuelan's government to be supportive of other progressive regimes in the hemisphere?
The analysis. What happened is not that the opposition gained a lot of votes in this election. Basically, what happened is that 2 million Venezuelans didn't went to vote for Maduro this time. When you analyze, when you compare the numbers of this election with the elections of 2013 in Venezuela, you will see a drop in the number of people that vote for the Chavismo. In 2013, we had like 7.6 million Venezuelan voting for the Chavismo, and this year, I mean, a few days ago, we had only 5.5 million Venezuelans voting for the Chavismo. And the opposition forces only, in 2013 had like 7.4 million votes, and this year they only had like 7.6 or 7.7 million votes. So they didn't have an incredible increase in the number of voters. What happened is that a lot of people that vote for the Chavismo didn't went to vote this time. So I go to those numbers because I believe that those numbers somehow answer the questions about if they are going to be willing to go for the recall referendum against Maduro. I mean, there's going to need a referendum. I mean, people are going to be forced to vote for that. And I believe that in the scenario of black and white, most of those ones that didn't went to vote are going to decide to vote for Chavismo, if you ask me. But to have that result, we need also to take certain steps in the coming hours or days to try to approach the problems that are driving Venezuelan Chavistas crazy. I mean, so I believe that we need to do something also to try to neutralize that situation. It's a good question, because the majority of the National Assembly that they have right now is able to approve or disapprove international treaties. But I believe that we don't need more international treaties. We already have a very comprehensive set of international cooperation agreements all over the region, mostly. And so we are not going to be in need of passing new, you know, treaties in front of the National Assembly. So I believe that in that particular constitutional scenario, we're going to be able to deal with the reality. I mean, we don't have the same resources that we had like 1 or 2 years ago, and of course that's going to impact all the, especially programs like Petrocaribe, that are somehow based in oil prices. But anyway, even those programs have their own countermeasures to try to deal with situations of economic oil prices stress. So I believe that even in the case of those programs like Petrocaribe, they design that program in ways that are very smart to make it work even in bad scenarios like the one that we are living right now.
I had thought that the U.S. would just love it if the National Assembly got rid of Petrocaribe and cut off Venezuelan oil to Cuba.
Yeah, they cannot do that.
They cannot do that. They cannot revoke treaties that are already in effect. They cannot take back.
They might try to revoke something, but they are going to need it. Those are laws, and they're going to need to go to the referendum for matters like that. So even in that case, they won't be able to do whatever they want. So I believe that that's important to highlight. I mean, the constitution that was approved in 1999 after Chavez initiative is a constitution with a very comprehensive system of check and balances. So that doesn't allow a branch to impose over the other one. And the truth is that after 10 years of having the majority in National Assembly, we have like most of the branches in Venezuela in hands of Chavista people, or mostly Chavista people. So that's going to give us some protection, because in the cases we're going to be in need of the decision of the Supreme Court, we're going to have the Supreme Court, I hope, voting for us. Or in the cases we're going to need the necessity, we're going to have the necessity of some decision from the citizens' power, which is another branch that we have, that can decide, for example, over the removal of members of the Electoral Council. We're going to have their support, for example. In the cases of trying to pass a recall referendum, we're going to have to go to referenda, so that way you're going to be forced to ask for the votes of the Venezuelans. So, I mean, there are a set of measures and countermeasures in the Constitution that are going to be used to even in the approval of a law that might go against the Constitution, the president has the right to veto that law. And if they insist in proposing the law, the president has the right to request a constitutional analysis of that law from the Supreme Court. And if they see that the law that they are trying to pass is going against the Constitution, they might decide that is an unconstitutional law. And that way we're going to be able to, you know, stop any initiative that go against the Constitution. So I believe that we're going to have this year and a scenario of a lot of constitutional battles in Venezuela. And a scenario of trying from the government side to take decisions in economic issues and approaching in a more effective way with the bases of the Chavismo, with the grassroots organizations. And I believe that at some points we are going to be forced to negotiate certain non-core issues with the right-wingers, if you ask me. But I believe that the non-core issues are the only one that the government is going to be able to negotiate, because the response of the Chavismo toward the results was the request of deepening the revolution. So I don't think that the government is seeing even that as a possibility, because the Chavista forces are requesting the government to go deep into more aggressive socialist reforms. No, I mean the National Assembly take office in January the 5th, but that doesn't mean that the government cannot. The executive branch is not going to be affected by that new term of the National Assembly. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, I mean, the government and the organized people can
executive
still...
Executive is executive.
Executive branch is going to be... I mean, Venezuela is not like a parliamentary system that is going to be affected by a change of the parliament. So we still have, I mean, theoretically talking, like 3 more years of Maduro's government. The only problem that we have is that in April 2016, constitutionally talking, people are going to have the right to call for a recall referendum against Maduro, against the president. But as I told you, in that case, they're going to need like 7-something million votes to show that they are willing to go for a referendum to try to get rid of Maduro. So it's complicated, and I don't see like the scenario that the opposition forces in Venezuela are going to choose. But we have to see it because, I mean, a lot of people, things are going to happen from today until the mid of January, and we have to see what's going to happen.
And that opposition is as law-abiding and they're going to abide by law as much as the...
Yeah, I was going to say that you're speaking as a Chavista,
but growing up in America,
I know that they don't have any commitment to the Constitution.
They have to follow the law. Never.
No. Nothing.
But that's what I mentioned before, that they might be trying to get the support, for example, of some military. If you ask me, that's the most possible scenario that they might be trying to use to try to get rid, to overthrow the whole system, and having the support of some militaries to try to get rid of, through a coup d'etat, of Maduro's government. But as I told you, I don't see that it's that easy for them because
Chavez's
influence over the majority of the high-ranking officiality in Venezuela is high, it's important.
So my question for you is about the food problem, which obviously is significant or still significant. Are there anything you can share with us about what could be done about that with two different aspects? One is the potential role of the military. I mean, the idea of hoarding food did not start in the last year or two. That's been going on for years.
For decades.
And it's gotten worse, obviously. And it's a key tool, you know, all over the world. The examples you gave, I mean, it's been used throughout history. So is there a potential role of literally people going into the bodegas and taking the food and distributing it the way it should have been distributed a long time ago? That's number one. And number two is, what about the effort and the struggle to actually, for Venezuela to produce more of its own food? Honegger and Michael Leibovitz, but particularly about Martha Honegger. I mean, Chavez, you know, said that was his, you know, his closest advisors, one of his closest advisors. Why was that? Because the contradiction between the role of a traditional party, a socialist party, okay, and the bureaucracy that exists, that's a real thing. It was real in the Soviet Union, it was real in China, it's real all over the world. And the whole idea of developing people's power from the ground up, you know, is a way to balance that kind of bureaucracy, which you laid out beautifully in your discussion. Okay, and if you read what Honegger says, for example, her 2010 pamphlet, which has been translated into English, about the relationship between democratic centralism and democracy, that's a very key polemic that Chavez himself raised all over the world. So I think, you know, that's a discussion that we should continue to have. I mean, not so much about Martha Honegger, but about the whole concept. But I'd really like to hear about the food.
You want to go through Martha Honegger first, but shortly, because that's like an hour discussion, days. Years discussion.
Well, first about the constitutional things, I just wanted to say, when I was there, Venezuelans, Chavistas have great respect for constitutional procedure and what's permitted and what's not. It's kind of cute for me almost to listen to, coming from the U.S., where, you know, it says in our constitution only the Congress can declare war, like... Who cares? But they don't care what's in the Constitution. But it's interesting that they pay such respect to it. Even though I know the opposition couldn't care less. They want to get rid of that Constitution. But about the Honecker and them tried to present Venezuela as a new kind, better kind of democracy than so-called 20th century socialism. But how can you have a real democracy when you have a capitalist class right there controlling the economy, trying to overthrow the government in alliance with the U.S. That is not a better kind of democracy. That's like a temporary democracy. They can take it. When they're powerful enough, they'll take it. So, I mean, they just succeeded partially in taking it. It's not some kind of viable alternative. And when the government there puts so much emphasis on these elections, and they want to build a separate system of communes, that's what they're aiming for. That's what she says in Leibowitz says in his books, build a system of communes as an alternative to this kind of bourgeois democracy. But they put all their emphasis into these elections. That's really saying, well, where's the real power? It's here. And these communes are just kind of, they're not developing. So it's not, it's just kind of, to me, it sounds like empty talk. Well, it's not real.
I mean, but
Hanukkah, it's not going to work.
But that didn't mean that they didn't believe in overthrowing capitalism in the state, in the way that they had the way in the state. Hanukkah went through the experience in Chile, man.
Yeah, I know. A lot of people want to build socialism without, like, hey, you got to do these things to get there. If you don't want to do them, you're not going to get there. That's what Allende faced, too.
But the contradiction is that ever since the Cuban Revolution and other armed revolutions to overthrow the state, in Latin America in particular, we've had these electoral, you know, situations, right? So we've had it in Ecuador, in Bolivia, we've had it in Venezuela, you know, and for a while in other countries. And so that's the contradiction. You know, it's not Hanukkah per se, it's the contradiction that if you don't overthrow the state the way it was done in the Soviet Union and China and Cuba, etc., and instead you do try to use bourgeois democracy, which is really what it is, there's filled with contradictions, and you better have a game plan. Game plan includes arming the people in an organized way. Game plan is how you're going to deal with all those capitalist, you know, parts of the economy that exist when you take over the state, whether you're in Bolivia, Ecuador, or Venezuela. That's the game plan. It's not easy. I'm not saying I have all the answers at all, but I think that's the contradiction, you know. It's not a matter of, like, it's bad to form cooperatives or communes. It's a matter of how you're going to deal with the other stuff. So I don't think that Honecker said you shouldn't deal with the other stuff. Not at all. I know about it.
But isn't the elephant in the room that the United States is not going to permit an armed socialist revolution in this country, I mean, in this hemisphere, after Cuba?
I'm sure they're going to do everything they can to stop it. Absolutely.
But sometimes they don't.
Yes, I believe that's a complex question. It's a very ideological question.
Nobody applied for their permission either.
let me go to the question that he raised, and then we go to you, Neil. But
food, yeah.
Yes, I mean, what are the measures that I see that we're going to take? I mean, there are like a variety of possible scenarios for that. I mean, the ones that are the orthodox ones of people screaming, asking for the government to nationalize all the banks and to nationalize all the distribution chains and all the productive companies. And I have to tell you, personally, I don't feel too comfortable with that. Not because I'm not for that, but I believe that right now, in the moment that we have right now in Venezuela, it's going to be very complicated. We are in a very, very delicate economic situation right now in Venezuela. So I believe that we're going to be forced to go to a more heterodox solution, trying to, for example, get rid of the exchange rate that might be considered by some like a neoliberal measure, but I believe it's the cause of most of the problems that we have right now. But at the same time, we have to decide. We have maybe to take control of more banks in the country, and maybe more distribution chains that are right now in hand. I mean, so the optimal way that I see is like a mix of, I mean, the last things that I told you. I mean, like some steps to trying to deepen the revolution, but also some steps to try to eliminate some circumstances that are promoting the incredible macroeconomic problem that we have right now in the country. So I believe that between complete nationalization towards that heterodox
solutions, those electoral solutions, I believe that that's what might happen in Venezuela. I don't see any scenario in which Maduro is going to announce that he is going to sign a deal with the International Monetary Fund or something like that. I mean, that's not any scenario, if you ask me. So I believe that the possibilities should go between the two options that I mentioned you. I don't remember the second part.
Well, it was about the food in particular, like in terms of the distribution
production and everything. Yes. Yes, I mean, we have been trying to do that. I mean, and Stan mentioned that in a very dramatic way, and it's true that it's dramatic because we have been trying to do that for several years. And I've witnessed a lot of projects that are very successful, but the truth is that we have, like, a big chunk of all the effort that we have spent to promote production wasted. So it's a reality. I don't know how we deal with that. Maybe we have to deal with that also trying to promote, as Stan was saying, different values. Because it's true that in Venezuela we are not dealing enough with trying to promote different socialist values. And we have, you can have President Maduro talking in the public national channel in Venezuela about socialism, and then in the other channel that is watched by 90% of the Venezuelans, you have a soap opera about a narco that made a lot of money and he lived up happily. And you know, and it's complicated to do something like that when you have that crazy, that kind of media attacking you, promoting anti-values. So it's complicated. Maybe we should take some steps to try to go deeper in the control of the media in Venezuela, for example. I will go for that, but they will fry us in the hell, accusing us of whatever if we do that. And that's part of also of the political calculation that we need to do. So it's complicated. It's not easy. But I believe that we should go towards that, because if we don't go towards that, you have to take that path, because if you don't do it, I mean, we're going to be in trouble.
We as Americans have to concentrate on what we can do to stop the U.S. interference in Venezuela, to ease the burden on the Venezuelans in that way. So what can we do?
Let me say something before Stan talks, because I believe that this is his area of expertise. But from my side, and I have to be careful not to enter too much into internal affairs of the U.S. because of my diplomatic condition, and we always have to be careful about that. But from my side, the way I see it is that we in Venezuela need a lot of international solidarity from the U.S. and from all over the world. And if I want to be critical about ourselves, I might tell you, and we also need to help those abroad trying to help us. And we have not been very articulate doing that. I believe that we have been doing some things, but we might try to do better in to try to also facilitate ways for people from all over the world to have a better look at Venezuela reality. But just making it short, I believe that we, especially in this moment, we need a lot of support and solidarity from the U.S. And I believe that, and I feel that right now, is because of the electoral results, a lot of people that didn't care too much about Venezuela because they have their criticism because of the particular political perspective about what is socialism and what is not socialism and this and that, some people are realizing that even though we might have a lot of mistakes, we still are like a positive entity or whatever in terms of socialism in the region and in the world. And I hope that because of that, we're going to be able to catch and take advantage of the situation to articulate a better solidarity movement here in the U.S. And that's what I wanted to say.
I participate in these biweekly national conference calls on building solidarity with Venezuela. One thing that came up before I went to Venezuela was having a national solidarity conference with Venezuela here in the United States. I'm not sure what their position is now on that, because I just got back and the election result was maybe a shock. I'll have to see. there are a lot of little organizations in the U.S. working on solidarity with Venezuela. California, the Alliance for Global Justice is one organization that sort of keeps alive the Latin American Solidarity Coalition, which did a lot of solidarity work over the years. And also while I was there, I met with the people from Venezuela Analysis, if you ever read that, about the importance of them having some page on their website that includes solidarity events around the world. In England, they have a very good solidarity organization, and they have some in Germany, which I don't know, but I don't read German. Australia, they have some. Canada, they also have some good solidarity organizations. And I was telling them, and I think they agree, that it's important that they now have something on their website so people can go to that website and see the activities that they can participate in. Another thing I did there was, you know, the Labor Notes conference is going to be here in April to bring some Venezuela labor leader here to speak at the conference and do a labor tour around the Midwest and maybe other parts of the country. There's also the Latin American Latin American Studies Association, which is like an academic conference. It's going to be in New York this year. They often get maybe 100 Cubans come, but they also get a lot of Venezuelans to come to that. We could work on touring some of these Venezuelans. So those are some things that are available for us to do this year to help get Venezuelans here to talk about what's going on in that country and how people here can get involved in solidarity work. And I also try to, you know, on that Chicago Stands of Venezuela, the Facebook page, put on good articles that have appeared in the press on Venezuela. I think there's a pretty good one in the Nation. I haven't put it on yet. A long article. Mosca Hetland, I think his name is. You know, and Eva Gollinger writes some good articles. It's one thing you can do is spread around these articles as much as possible. That's the easy way to help counter all the disinformation about Venezuela, which is constant every day. Every day I open up Yahoo News. There's three more reasons you should hate Chavistas. You know, just make up stuff. It's just, you know.
See that what is coming next in terms of what is going to happen. I mean, how the right-wing world is going to relate to Venezuela is that they are going to intensify the media attacks against Venezuela. And they already, I mean, you can already start seeing this in the media with accusations about narco states and corruption and this and that. So I believe that they are going to go harder into that path because, I mean, they are realizing that the media campaign against Venezuela is, you know, is providing them with results. So I believe that they are going to keep going through that path. And the other path that they might choose is deepen the economic war. But I believe, maybe I'm wrong, okay? But I believe that they are not going to exploit that one because they need certain stability after the right-wingers take the National Assembly to try to make Venezuelans believe that there's a better economical scenario in Venezuela because they took power. Maybe I'm wrong in that analysis, but anyway, I believe that if that happens, they are going to use all their tools to maximize the media campaign against Venezuela. So thank you all for being here. We are